used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
The less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Show, Western Canada's only radio program and podcast on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada, on Friday, June 7th, 2019. For the next hour, I'm your host, Jen Dobell, and I'm joined in studio by my co-host, Allison Cole.
Hi there.
Today's show features two interviews with Vancouver lawyers dedicating their expertise to helping animals. Rebecca Bretter of Bretter Law discusses her lawsuit against the federal government for violating animal transportation laws in relation to live horse exports to Japan. This is a groundbreaking case as it's the first time an animal protection organization has sued the government over the way it transports animals. And retired lawyer Patricia Kendall will discuss her campaign to prevent animal testing at the new St. Paul's Hospital, which is expected to be built by 2026. Stay tuned for those interviews in just a few minutes. And last night, there was an animal rights demonstration taking place. It's an activism opportunity that our co-host Allison took part in. And Allison, I just want to know how that went for you.
Yeah, so we had a lovely community potluck and then an activism workshop by that vegan couple who brand themselves by that name. They're YouTube stars and they have a large following on social media, and they're from Australia actually, and they're a great activism duo. I met them for the first time last year at the Animal Liberation Conference in Berkeley, and they just got back from that, or they just were at that this week, and they're on their world tour right now, and were their first stop in Canada. So they are here now for all this week into Monday, and there's going to be so many animal rights activism and vegan outreach events happening this week that we will talk about. And anyways, this so I got to meet them. There's a picture of us on our Facebook if you want to see, and they're just such a lovely couple, and I find them to be, if anyone is familiar with Natasha and Luca, I find them to be such an inspirational group of people who just they're just inspiring the world. They're making great change for the planet, I believe, and they always say that being vegan isn't the most we can do, it's the least we can do, and I really appreciate that. So they're on that tour right now to instill passion into activists and give them tips and advice on what it is to be a vegan outreach activist. So we had a potluck yesterday evening, and I wanted to go to that, but I unfortunately had to leave right when their workshop was starting. However, I missed out on that, but I wanted to say that, you know, we do have more events coming out this week. And did you know, Jen, that this Sunday has been declared as Vancouver Animal Rights Day?
Yes,
of course you know.
Sure.
So yeah, so later on in our events, we're going to be speaking more about that. But just for now, I wanted to specifically talk about, you know, when you're in your activism journey, if you feel that you're not an activist yet, or maybe I have a friend who's just like, he's like 95% vegan, but he's not informed and he's not educated. That's why I brought him to this event with me last night, and I made him stay there while I had to leave, so he could be, because I want him to find out information from all different experts that are around. And we had many in that room yesterday, which was great. But if you're just starting out, why don't you come march with us this Sunday? It's going to be the Vancouver March to Close All Slaughterhouses. And I've been going to this march from even, we have had it every year from even before when it was called that. It used to be the Farm Sanctuary March. And every year I see the numbers just increase and increase, like, prolifically. Just, I think we had about 400 people last year, and we take over the streets of downtown Vancouver. We speak out loud and proud for the animals. We're there to be their voices, and it's I think it's a great community building event, and I invite everyone to attend, because as long as you can walk, or you could even bike if you wanted to,
or wheelchair,
yeah,
or
wheelchair,
bring kids in strollers. There's always a lot of kids in strollers. We would love for you to leaflet. That's the most important part of the march. If you can be running along those sidewalks and talking to people as you go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I'll be speaking about more of that later on in the event.
Let's play our interview with Patricia Kendall now.
Today we're speaking with a local Vancouverite, Pat Kendall. Welcome to the show, Pat.
Thank you, Jen.
So just before we get started on talking about the reason I'm having you on the show, which is your involvement in trying to prevent animal testing at the new build of St. Paul's Hospital, let's talk about your journey into veganism, because you're a new vegan and you got right into activism, and this is why I love you so much. So tell us your story.
Oh, thank you. I worked for 26 and a half years as a lawyer, downtown Vancouver, real high pressure job. And towards the end of my career, my health got very bad. And I can look back and go, I think I just kind of barely made it. It was seriously bad. And I just knew, my gut feeling was very strong, that as soon as I retired, I needed to become vegetarian. And truthfully, the possibility of being vegan wasn't even on my radar screen at that point. And I didn't even know anybody who was a vegan. And I was just very wrapped up in the downtown corporate world of lawyers and clients, and I'm just going to say it's a pretty heavy meat-eating atmosphere where there's lots of lawyer lunches, lawyer dinners, client dinners, banquets, conferences, etc. Anyway, when I became vegetarian, which was easy for me to do several years ago, I started to realize how absolutely easy it would be to become vegan, which it was. And of course, I had the time to start. I watched the movie What the Health on Netflix. That was hugely influential for me. And I'd always considered myself an environmentalist. And then I watched Cowspiracy. That was so influential for me. And then I watched, some of these, Undercover Slaughterhouse Factory Farm films, and that was so shocking that was just the absolute seal of the deal. I was just like, I have to be vegan now, there's just no choice. So I'm vegan now, even if it wasn't better for me. I'm vegan now, even if it wasn't better for the environment. But instead, it's just a win-win-win. Mm-hmm. I'm like solid vegan now.
And beyond that, you're an activist. So tell us about this.
Well, if you can just hear in what I just said, the passion was rising in me. And truthfully, I was just really angry at the decades of, I'm just going to say, lies and misinformation that I was fed, and I use that word fed very literally, and how it compromised my health, and how I could see that it compromised the health of people around me, the health of the planet, the health of all the animals. Like, I was just, truthfully, I was kind of fed by fury. And I'm like, I cannot sit here eating my beautiful vegan diet and be quiet about this. Mm-hmm. Like, activism just seemed to me to be like two hands clapping. Like, you can't clap with one hand. One hand's veganism and the other is activism.
I like that analogy.
Because I was friends with you, Jen, on Facebook, I saw these different, and you invited me to join different groups, and I was like, oh, there's actually a leafleting thing happening. Oh, I think I'm going to go. I was really nervous. And, I see there's a protest against the Canada Goose store and fur clothing. I think I'll go. But, of course, people are so welcoming, and it was so rewarding to do. So it's just really helped me find, I would say, it's helped me move into this like really bigger, greater place in my life where I'm finding, or should I say found, my purpose for being here. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I can't stop now. And so anyway, I know we're going to talk about a campaign that I launched, which uses my unique abilities, and I'm not going to say better abilities, I'm just going to say the abilities that are unique to me. And I know you wanted to talk about this, but I'm just saying every single person has something, young or old, that's a unique gift that they have that they can contribute to this movement. So I would just really encourage people to do what they can, because whatever they can do, I can't do it. I can only do what I can do, but we need you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I was actually out with some friends last night, and we were strategizing how to improve upon the animal rights movement so that we have people utilizing their best skills to advance this movement for the animals. And, you know, there are people that might not be so good at speaking to the media, like me, and there may not be people that are good at doing a megaphone speak out to educate the public, and that's myself as well. If I don't have my facts in front of me, I'm going to get nervous and forget what I'm saying. And so there's roles that we're all better suited for, and here you are as a retired lawyer. And that is definitely an asset to our movement. And so you've chosen to use that skill on a few areas of interest, but actually right now what we're just talking about is the rezoning for the animals campaign that you have. So would you like to just give a brief overview of what's going on there?
Yeah, so in Vancouver here, we have this absolutely beautiful, I mean, I am still, Jen, amazed at this little beautiful window of opportunity has landed upon us to, it's like, I'll explain later, it's just a few months, a window of opportunity to persuade Vancouver City Council to prevent animal experimentation at the new St. Paul's Hospital. So just this background, there's an existing St. Paul's Hospital. It's one of the two major hospitals in Vancouver. It's right downtown on Burrard Street, and there have been, it's been there since probably the 1950s. There have been rumors forever that they do animal experimentation at the hospital, which I would say 99% of Vancouverites have no idea of and would be absolutely kind of shocked at if they knew. But animal experimentation is so secretive. You know what? Something really unbelievable happened to me this week. Someone forwarded to me an email they'd received from someone who's a researcher at St. Paul's and confirmed this person did research on pigs at St. Paul's Hospital. So I was like, I have proof. I personally have proof. But you know what? Once, even if someone in their home city can find out if there's animal testing, and good luck, because you have to try to use freedom of information laws to find out, then even if you could find that out, there's really nothing that can be done. And as far as I know, municipalities are just, their hands are tied. They can't just go pass a bylaw just willy-nilly any day of the week, right? So that's been the case here in Vancouver at St. Paul's for decades. But the beautiful thing is St. Paul's is moving to this huge new tract of land in an industrial area of Vancouver. And so the zoning laws, like all land is zoned, and the zoning means what are the permitted land uses. And land can only be used for what it's zoned for, and it must not be used for what it is not zoned for. And it's up to city council to decide on the zoning, and it's certainly not something someone's entitled to. Particular zoning, they have to apply, and council has complete discretion as to what zoning they give to an applicant. And this new hospital land is zoned industrial, so it cannot be used for hospital. And the hospital has applied for rezoning for a change in land use, and their zoning application is actually on the City of Vancouver's website. It's probably 100 pages or more if you printed it out. But the section on land use, they're asking for about 20 land uses, and one of them is laboratories. So what's also beautiful about rezoning is that the courts have said, well, first off, the legislation says a municipal council cannot rezone unless they hear the public. So we have a statutory right to make representations to council about this rezoning. Yay! Mm-hmm. And the courts have also said the public's right to make representations to council is not adequate unless the public is given every single bit of information about the rezoning. So we're entitled to information. We don't have to go through freedom of information requests to get it. So I asked the Vancouver City Planner, will there be animal experimentation at the new hospital in the laboratories? And she said to me, really? I've never even heard of it. So I'm like, well, guess what? This issue is on the table. The hospital may not have been forthcoming about it yet before, but we're raising it. And so she asked the hospital, and the hospital, I'm just going to say, in my opinion, gave a hedge reply and said, well, it hasn't been decided yet. And I'm like, okay, guess what? That means this campaign is going into full gear. Mm-hmm. Because if we wait till after the rezoning, and then the hospital decides, which I'm sure they will, to do animal testing, we've lost our chance.
Okay. So my question to you right now is, earlier you said that the public has the right to know every detail about this. Therefore, wouldn't the hospital have to tell you right now whether or not they're going to be doing animal testing? Don't they have to figure that out and be clear so that the public can be fully informed?
You know, I think it's probably fair enough, personally. I don't want to have to be really careful with this because I don't want to get sued for defamation. And my personal opinion is, of course, they're going to do animal testing. They've got two complete buildings designated on their plans within this huge healthcare campus, two buildings dedicated for research. Mm-hmm. One is to be built in phase one. Another building will be built in phase two. But anyway, I think it's fair enough for them to say at this point, we haven't decided. But it's also fair enough for us to kick this campaign into gear.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't see how they can get away with an answer as vague as we haven't decided when it comes down to actual zoning and use of the land. Are you certain that they don't have to be very clear on that so that the public can have that right?
They're asking for laboratory use. And as you know, we can talk about it in a minute. There are now some absolutely incredible non-animal testing technologies. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying, yes, let them have these two buildings for research, please. I'm all in favor of real adequate, humane, relevant, effective medical research, but let's let this research take place without the use of animals. So I want council within the rezoning bylaw that apparently they're going to adopt sometime after this fall to have within the bylaw wording that says these are the permitted uses on this land, you know, different uses, 1 to 20, list them. But when they get to laboratory, it'll say laboratory, but without the use of animals.
Okay. And so for the public that wants to learn more about what kind of testing goes on in labs, because I think a lot of people are under the impression that in Canada we don't really abuse animals. So where have you learned more that's going on specifically in Canada that our listeners could check out today, just so that they understand how important this is to take action on?
Well, first up, I'm going to say I spent, and I'm using the word I, but I just want to sort of backtrack and say, this is not about me, it's about the animals. I've just felt so called to do this for the animals. But anyway, I did tons of research and created this website, and I'll just say it now, but you'll probably say it again at the end. It's rezoningforanimals.com. And as I said, testing of animals is quite secretive, but thanks to PETA and different organizations, I was able to piece together information about animal testing in Canada. But if someone wants to just get the flavor of it, and if people are sensitive, I'm just going to say up front, this is so traumatic. Like, it's on the website, and there's a link to something on YouTube, and it's called Animal Testing in 60 Seconds Flat, and it's literally 1 minute, 60 seconds of clips of animal testing. And you know what, Jen? I I haven't been able to watch the whole 60 minutes. Last night, I was like, I know I'm being interviewed by you. I should try to watch it through. And after about 18 seconds, I had to turn it off. And I was just, it's so horrifying. It's so horrible.
Mm-hmm. Well, another documentary is Maximum Tolerated Dose. I don't believe that it specifically focuses on Canada, but I do want to remind our listeners today that the idea that the Canadian laws protect animals here better than elsewhere in the world is an absolute fallacy. And you can look up any of our previous shows on animalvoices.org featuring animal rights lawyer Anna Pippis. She talks about that mostly in the farm animal use sector, but also we've interviewed an undercover investigator from Last Chance for Animals in regards to a testing facility in Montreal. That undercover investigator, to my knowledge, is still working, and I'm sure that there are now more investigations out online that you can check out. So again, animalvoices.org, looking up Anna Pippis episodes as well as Last Chance for Animals. And so, Pat, thank you. And I understand it is very hard to watch. And I just implore our listeners, even if you can't watch it, please at least take some action. Go to the website rezoningforanimals.com. Is it .com? It is.
Yes.
And help us. What kind of a timeline are we on here as far as the public giving input?
So before council can adopt the rezoning bylaw, as I said, they have to hear the public. And it's specifically at this event called the public hearing, which will be held. The city planner said we're expecting to hold the public hearing in the fall. So I'm going to just roughly, let's say that's November. We've got 6 months. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, ideally, in my best world, we would have, you know, 100 people sign up to speak at the public hearing. Everybody has 5 minutes, and council must, because as required by law, sit and hear people speak at the public hearing. But the public hearings, they can be really difficult for people, because if too many people sign up, then people wait all day. They don't know when their 5 minutes is going to come. It ends up being 10 at night. People have sat all day. And then it's adjourned in the morning. People have to work. They're called. They're not there for their 5 minutes. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
So I'm like, I'm not going to wait for this campaign to put pressure on Vancouver City Council at the public hearing stage. Instead, I'm like, you know what? There's nothing wrong with us starting right now to start pressuring council. And the bottom line about council is they're elected officials, and most of them want to get reelected. And they also don't want to have to deal with a lot of public unhappiness while they're elected. So they try to do what the public wants. So I'm like, let's get enough people to indicate to Vancouver City Council that we don't want animal testing at the new hospital. It's not effective. It's horrifically cruel, and there are better non-animal alternatives. And this is all on the website. So mm-hmm. Basically, I'm asking people, please go to the website. There's so much information there. And then there's a place where you can voice your opinion to council. So there's a link to send an email, which goes directly into the inbox of the mayor and the 10 City Vancouver councillors, and just send even a one-line email saying, I'm opposed to animal testing at the new St. Paul's, and send that off to council. And then there's another box that says stay connected, and I would love if people would put their information on our subscriber list. It will let me send updates from time to time, which I promise there won't be too many, but mostly it just lets me know how many people are supporting the campaign.
And again, this is rezoningforanimals.com to get involved. And also, if you'd like to learn more about how and why animal testing does not work to find cures for human diseases, you can check out an interview that I did with Dr. Ray Greek. He's quite famous in this field. Animalvoices.org, search the episode Dr. Ray Greek, or just look him up on YouTube.
Right. There's information out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, this was
definitely
the... when I became an animal rights activist, Pat, this was one of the issues that I knew the least about and was least effective in advocated for, especially when I spoke with people from the scientific community. I often found myself unable to answer their rebuttals. And now that I've educated myself a bit more, I actually feel quite confident debating with scientific types, even though I'm not one, and effectively. And I know when they're lying. And it is really easy to learn these facts. Dr. Ray Greek is probably the best one to learn from. He's got a book that he actually wrote for activists, for people who are not necessarily part of the scientific community, to be able to engage in these discussions with scientists and to, you know, beat them in a debate, basically, for the sake of the animals.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so I so agree with you. Like, you know, as vegans, we're concerned about all animals, whether they're animals in the food chain, whether they're animals used for clothing, whether they're animals used for entertainment, or whether they're animals used for experimentation. And without any judgment about this, I will just say that out of those four groups of animals who are horrifically abused, the animals used for experimentation seem to be the least in the consciousness of animal activists. Mm-hmm. And I understand this because the whole thing is very secretive, and because in the most of the time, there's not anything we can do about it. So, I mean, it was really a learning curve for me too, and part of my goal here is to also raise the consciousness of animal lovers and animal activists to these poor animal creatures as well. Mm-hmm. And in Canada, it's one thing to sort of talk about animal experimentation as if that's just like, you know, it's kind of like the idea of steak on a plate. But when you really look at how does steak get to your plate, then you start to see all the steps and everything and all the horror behind it, right?
Yeah.
So animal experimentation for me was just like just something. Then when I started to learn how many animals, what kinds of animals, where do they get the animals, what things are done to the animals, how can they tell if they're in pain, what laws protect the animals? Oh, there are no laws that protect the animals. Oh, there's just guidelines. Oh, and there's no consequence if they don't follow the guidelines. And how do they decide when an animal should be killed? Oh, and how are animals killed? I mean, Jen, it was personally one of the most difficult things I've ever done, because I just started to see and read and learn things that were just horrific to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've had Gary Charbonneau, a local filmmaker, on our show multiple times before. He created the documentary Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered, and I'm happy to say he's actually just completed making a film about animal testing, and that will be out soon. We don't have a title yet for you, but rest assured, on animalvoices.org, you will be able to hear an interview with him, hopefully in the next few months. And I do wish his film was coming out in time for this hearing in the fall. But in the meantime, please do get involved at rezoningfortheanimals.com. And
yes.
Thank you, Pat, for being on the
yes.
show today.
And I just wanted to just emphasize that we've just got this narrow window. Once the rezoning, actually after the public hearing, council is legally not allowed to hear any further comments from the public.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So then after the public hearing, the campaign ends. The public has no right to make comments to council. Council has no right to hear them. They pass the rezoning. The land is rezoned. The hospital occupies the land for perhaps 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we have no right to help or ability legally to help those animals for the next 100 years.
Right. So
that's
yeah.
why I'm like, that's why I'm really encouraging people to support this now. It's not an endless campaign. It's just maybe 6 months at most.
Right.
And if people sign up, and, you know, if you're very keen to, and I just want to say, people outside Vancouver, please help us, because Vancouver Council, they don't know if someone sending an email from Toronto might be an elector, a voter in Vancouver at the next election. And they don't know if that person in Winnipeg won't be an influencer of a voter in at the next Vancouver election.
Right.
And Vancouver is also, and on its website, it prides itself in setting an example to the world. I'm like, yeah, the world is watching, and yeah, this might be unprecedented, and we're counting on you, council. In fact, there's 11 people, but we only need a majority. That's 6 people. We just need 6 people to do the right thing. So thank you, Jen, for allowing me to use this opportunity to urge people to help persuade 6 people to do the right thing for the animals.
Thank you, Pat. So rezoningfortheanimals.com, and we will speak with you soon.
Thank you, Jen.
Take care. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Mosaic is proud to present the English Language Institute, located off of Commercial Broadway. Are you scared to pick up the phone? Our everyday English class can help. Our experienced teachers give you the listening skills to feel confident chatting in English with anyone, anywhere. For further information, visit mosaicbc.org/MELI. The Mosaic English Language Institute on Commercial Drive.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
You were just listening to a local retired municipal lawyer, Pat Kendall, who is dedicating her life to speaking out for animals. And she was talking about the campaign to prevent animal testing at the new St. Paul's Hospital facility. And up next, we have an interview with another lawyer, Rebecca Bretter of Bretter Law, discussing her lawsuit against the federal government for violating animal transportation laws in relation to live horse exports to Japan. This is a groundbreaking case, as it's the first time an animal protection organization has sued the government over the way it transports animals. Let's listen to that interview now. You are currently representing the Canadian Horse Defense Coalition in an application against the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, which is in charge of enforcing transportation of animal laws, and you're suing because they're not following their own regulations for live horse export. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, it's a really exciting case. It is a groundbreaking case. It is the first time an animal protection group in Canada has sued the Canadian federal government over the way animals are transported in this country. And so I think this case is going to have potentially broader implications as well. So hopefully that'll be a good thing. But in this particular case, we're suing the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, the CFIA, because of the way they're transporting horses to Japan live by air. And what we're alleging, well, first of all, I think, let me start with a bit of background, like what's actually going on, and then I'll talk about the lawsuit itself. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I just couldn't believe it myself when I started being counsel on this file. I mean, I knew these things were happening. I knew that horses were being slaughtered in Canada. I heard about the live exports of horses from Canada, but I didn't really realize the extent to which this is happening and how much is happening and how much the industry is worth. Like, this is an industry that is in the hundreds of millions of dollars. And so I think that's why the government is taking this quite seriously, and in the sense that they're, I think it's quite obvious that they're siding with industry no matter what they say about how much they want to protect animals and animal welfare. But every other week from Canada, and it's usually from either the Calgary Airport or Edmonton Airport, there are hundreds of horses that are crammed into small crates, grouped together where they're not separated, and put on these long haul flights to Japan. And we just recently discovered to South Korea, too. And these flights are like, they're at least, just the flights alone are between 12 and 14 hours long. That doesn't include the amount of time that it takes to load them, to unload them, the delays that these horses go through if, for whatever reason, like refueling or some maintenance of the airplane or whatever it is. But the point is, these horses are crammed in these crates for a super long time. and they're being transported for slaughter for the purposes of meat, and specifically sushi meat. It's considered, horse meat is considered a delicacy in Japan and in other places around the world, but raw horse meat is considered a delicacy in Japan, and they serve it as sushi next to fish sushi. So you go to a restaurant, I mean, I guess we wouldn't, but others who do, they go to a restaurant that serves fish sushi, and on the same menu, they have horse meat as well. So that's the purpose of these exports. The horses are being killed for the purposes of meat, and they're being shipped live as opposed to being killed here in Canada, presumably because, I mean, we don't know for a fact why, but presumably it's because to keep the flesh, the meat, fresh, right? So they slaughter the horses in conditions that, by the way, we do not know and we're not privy to. And then they get killed and then served on plates. So that's kind of the backdrop. And there are thousands of these horses. There are about 5,000 to 8,000 horses per year that get shipped off. There may be more. And this has been going on since at least 2012. Canada still allows this. People may have heard that there's a ban in the United States to slaughter horses. That's not completely accurate. There's no actual ban to slaughter horses. It's just that the federal government in the U.S. has stopped funding inspections for slaughter, for the slaughter of horses. And if there aren't any inspections, they're not allowed slaughtering horses. So it's not really a ban, but it's a way that they were able to get around to stop the slaughter of horses in the U.S. So horses that would have been slaughtered in the U.S. are being shipped over to Canada and to Mexico. And that, so those, that's where they come from. But the specific origin, some of these horses, and I want people to realize, some of these horses could easily have been someone's pet. When someone couldn't afford a horse, they sold the horse to someone else, and then that person, for whatever reason, couldn't take care of the horse, and then the horse ends up at an auction. And these auctions are, oh my God, like, I don't know if you ever witnessed them, but they're pretty awful. And so these horses get bought up at auctions by what are called kill buyers. And you can imagine, so those are buyers who intend to kill the horses and these buyers and sell them to others who will transport these horses to get killed overseas. So they could have been someone's pet. Some of these horses, we understand, have actually been bred for being slaughtered for meat. Other horses come from the horse racing industry. Others have been show horses, like jumping, like have been used for shows for jumping. And so they come from all over the place, including as people's pets. And I think that probably resonates with some people. I mean, I think it's just as wrong, regardless of whether the animal was a pet or not. I think it's just as wrong. But the reality is that I think this resonates with people who, especially those who consider themselves horse people and who have horses as pets. They're like, oh, my God, I didn't realize that this is actually happening. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the background of it. Our lawsuit, and this is on behalf of CHDC, the Canadian Horse Defense Coalition, that's an amazing organization that is trying to advocate to ban the slaughter of horses in Canada as well as the live export of horses outside of Canada. And they've been tracking these shipments since about 2012, and they've been gathering Freedom of Information documents for the last several years. And it just got to a point for them where they're like, this is crazy. Like, we have laws in Canada that are simply not being obeyed by the federal government itself. I mean, specifically by the industry itself, but I should say the government is not enforcing the regulations against the industry that is shipping these horses. And in our specific case, it's actually quite simple. The law says, the current law, that is, says that horses over 14 hands in height have to be separated when they're being shipped live. And 14 hands in height, for people who aren't really horse people, so to speak, it's basically a horse that's larger than a pony. Mm-hmm. And in these shipments, these are all large, mostly Belgian horses, which are very big horses. draft horses, which are big horses. And so the law says if you're going to ship them, you've got to separate them. And what's happening is that the horses are not being separated. They're being, like I said before, they're being crammed together in these small containers without any separation between them.
And they may not get along, and it's a long flight.
Exactly, and that's the concern. And we know for a fact, at least from some of the FOI documents that we were able to get, we know that there have been injuries. But the problem is that there is no requirement to report back to the federal government, to our federal government, if there has been injuries or death. It's all like totally voluntary.
Mm-hmm.
And the government, our government, is saying that there is an agreement between Japan and Canada that Japan will report back if there are any injuries. But come on, like seriously, mm-hmm. Why would a self-interested party, being Japan, report back to us saying, oh yes, there have been so many injuries? Like, obviously they want things to go smoothly as possible on their end. They want to make as much money as possible on their end. So I think it flies in the face of common sense that we could rely on some kind of voluntary agreement that they're going to report back injuries. There aren't any cameras in the crates, so there's no way of even knowing if an animal goes down during flight. It's a gong show. So that was a bit of a tangent. But so the first reason that we're suing is that they're shipping horses without being separated when they're not allowed to do that under the law. The second reason is because the law also says that the tops of horses' heads are not allowed to touch the tops of crates. And we have tons of pictures that clearly show that the tops of horses' heads are touching the tops of these crates.
Mm-hmm.
Their ears are poking through, and you could just see that their heads are touching the tops. The government in response, the CFIA in response, is saying, first of all, we can't tell if they're standing in their natural position. Because
so they're standing on their toes? Is that what that means?
Yeah, I don't know. And they're like, well, if they're not standing in their natural position and they're touching the tops of the crates, that's okay. If they are standing in their natural position and they're touching the tops of crates, that's not okay. So they're saying in the pictures, you know, they just can't tell. But really, like any layperson looking at these pictures could tell the horse is standing normally.
Well, so, and the other concern is when there's turbulence and a 9-hour flight, I think it is, to Japan, plus all the wait time and the loading mm-hmm. time, all the urine and feces that would be on the floor, which is slippery, and then turbulence happens, and maybe they have another horse next to them. Maybe they spend mm-hmm. the flight in a very uncomfortable position where they fell, and there's another horse standing on them, and they can't get up.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, we only have a few minutes left, but I just want you to point out one more thing. Many Canadians mm-hmm. think that we have very strong laws here protecting animals, and this is obviously highlighting how that isn't true, and also, you know, the laws that govern animals in the agriculture industry here, you know, the pigs and the cows and chickens being transported, that's all very weak as well, isn't it?
Oh, I completely agree, and the short answer is that there are no specific laws that govern the protection of farmed animals in Canada. The only laws that we have are criminal animal cruelty laws, but those are so hard to enforce against the farming industry because very often their practices are what's referred to as a generally accepted or reasonably accepted practices. So it's very hard to prosecute them. And when you hear the farming industry say, oh, well, we have these codes of practice and we have laws. Look, we have the codes of practice and we have all these provisions that make sure that they have enough bedding and we give them water and we give them, like, that we ensure their welfare. These codes of practice, those are not laws. Those are guidelines. So if they don't follow them, there's no repercussion. Now, that said, there are provinces across the country that are starting to incorporate these guidelines as part of the law. But in many cases, including here in British Columbia, these guidelines are not incorporated as mandatory. Like, the law doesn't say that it's mandatory to comply with these guidelines or the codes of practice. The law basically says that farmers can use that as a defense if they are being prosecuted. And that's a topic for another conversation, but suffice it to say that it makes it really hard to prosecute farmers, and our laws in Canada, quite frankly, in regards to the protection of farmed animals, suck.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're just out of time now, but thank you so much. And where can our listeners follow this information to see how you're doing with this lawsuit?
They're free to go either on our firm website, bredderlaw.com. They're also, I really encourage them to go to the Canadian Horse Defense Coalition's website. They have some amazing, just really informative information in regards to the live export and just the slaughter of horses in Canada.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being on the show, Rebecca, and thank you for dedicating your life to animal rights law.
No, oh, thank you so much.
Okay, take care.
Okay, thank
Bye-bye.
You.
So we have some events for you. As I mentioned, this is a very busy weekend and week of events. Vancouver Animal Rights Day is coming up on Sunday, so maybe I'll speak to that first to make sure that we have enough time to get through everything. Actually, I think we do. So starting tomorrow, I'm going to talk about an event we're having tomorrow, Saturday, June the 8th, from 3 to 5 p.m. There will be a day of action singing the liberation song in the city, and we'll be doing it in flash mob style, which sounds really fun. If you know the liberation song, that is basically our anthem for animal liberation, and we sang it at the Meet the Victims event in Canada on April the 28th. I know it was sung throughout the Animal Liberation Conference this past year. Very powerful song. And Natasha and Luca, that vegan couple, as I mentioned before, they will be joining this action. And we'll be singing the liberation song at 2 to 3 different places in Vancouver, organized as a flash mob. So if you like to sing or if you like to play the guitar, you can get involved with this as well. So right now the location is to be announced. So what I will do is post this event on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and you can go on there and RSVP to find out more information. So as I mentioned, Sunday, June the 9th has been declared Vancouver Animal Rights Day, and we're starting off at 11 a.m. in downtown Vancouver for the annual march to close all slaughterhouses. Our annual march taking over the streets of downtown Vancouver with around 400 people attending last year. Every year that I go to this march, there's more and more people. It's an event that's not to be missed. There will be speakouts and die-ins as we take over the streets of downtown Vancouver. Arrive at 11 a.m. at Robson Square just to get oriented, and then we usually leave about an hour after that, and we take over the streets of Robson and Denman and Davie and Granville, and it's a lot of fun. It's a great community building event, as I mentioned earlier. Also, later that day on Sunday, Vancouver Animal Rights Day, after the march at 3:30 p.m., there will be a Cube of Truth with that vegan couple attending, which will take place at English Bay Beach. You can come to hold a screen, engage with passersby, or just to experience what this worldwide known animal rights outreach event is going to be all about. And then to cap off the day, there's going to be a Vancouver Animal Rights Day after party and community potluck. So that's starting at 7 p.m. at English Bay Beach, which is where the Cube of Truth is going to be happening. So you can kind of just stay there all day. You can join us in the evening on Sunday, June the 9th, as the local community comes together to feast and celebrate the first ever Vancouver Animal Rights Day. I will post more info on that. I think I already have as well at our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. So yeah, moving on. Oh, and that's going to be a potluck too, by the way. And so something that's coming on up in a few weeks is the annual Yulin Dog Meat Festival, which happens in Yulin, China. We have done maybe one or two shows about it in the past. If you want to find out more about it, at our website, animalvoices.org. And what this is, it's every summer in June, thousands of dogs, I've read 10 to 15,000 dogs are killed during the 10 days of the Yulin Dog Meat Festival in Yulin, China. It's happening all over again this year, starting in 2 weeks, unless people like us speak out to stop this horrific festival. One of the most terrifying things about the annual festival is that many household dogs, cats, and other pets, other companion animals are abducted by kidnappers trying to make a quick buck as the dog festival begins. So with supportive growing communities of people like you, the animal rights movement continues to grow, and they cannot ignore our voices where we say we want this to stop. So there will be a peaceful protest on Sunday, June the 22nd, starting at 12 p.m., going till 3, and this is going to be at the Vancouver Art Gallery on the Robson Street Square side. All you have to do is bring yourself, because posters and leaflets will be provided. And I've got one more. I think that's it, actually. Jen, did you have any upcoming events that you, off the top of your head, that I haven't mentioned that are on your mind?
No, but I do want to mention about that March to Close All Slaughterhouses. I've taken part in it over the years, and as someone who's really focused on animal rights strategy, I would like to see more people running along the sidewalks handing out leaflets. There could be more of that rather than people in the middle with a sign that no one sees. And for people that are on the outside of that march, hold your sign sideways so that all the people on the sidewalk can read it for a longer period of time rather than if you're facing forward and they're not really seeing what it is. I see a lot of confused faces along the sidewalks. Almost everybody is just wondering what this is. Of course, the signs do explain it, but for people to be leafleting a little bit more and engaging in some conversations, I find is a very, very effective form of activism, and I end up getting into some discussions with people that are long enough that it warrants the parade passing me by, and I have to run to catch up because I feel like I'm nearly veganizing somebody in one conversation. You just never know who's going to be
awesome.
Receptive. There will be leaflets provided. Yeah. You can show up and grab some.
Yeah. Last year I brought all my leaflets and we gave them all out. I was one of those people running along the side because it really feels like you're making an impact. People are willing to take them, and it's really encouraging. So if you have any animal-friendly events that you would like to have announced on the show, just send us an email at info@animalvoices.org or go to our Facebook, Animal Voices Vancouver.
And I've posted a lot of the events that Allison spoke about today on Animal Voices Vancouver Facebook page. If you want to check it out or click yes, you're attending, that would be great. So in news, a German circus has been using holograms instead of animals, the first in the world to do so. Circus Roncalli's founder got the idea after seeing Justin Timberlake performing at the NFL Super Bowl halftime show in 2018. He was accompanied by a hologram of Prince, who had died in 2016. I actually didn't know that. That's interesting. I'll have to YouTube that one. So the circus uses 3D holograms from 11 projectors to show horses, elephants, and fish, and the images were created by a team of 15 designers and software engineers. The circus, which was founded in 1976, ditched exotic animals in the mid-90s, but continued to use horses until 2018. And on a recent radio show just a few weeks ago, we were talking about the Vancouver Aquarium and activists who actually met with the new CEO to try to offer ideas to make that place more humane for animals. And in fact, what we mean by that is getting rid of all the animals, taking them to sanctuary and never having them in captivity again. And this was something that was brought up. The National Geographic's Ocean Odyssey, which uses similar technology to this circus, is currently displayed in New York. It's been very successful. It's been developed and produced with a team of Academy, Emmy, and Grammy Award-winning artists. People can walk through an adventure across the Pacific Ocean where they'll see, hear, and feel what it's like to live under the sea. Groundbreaking technology and stunning photorealistic animation transport people to a battle between two vicious squid, a luminous coral reef at night, and more of our ocean's most spectacular and extraordinary moments. I can't imagine any child not loving this, by the way. It's so much better than looking at animals in captivity, isn't it? And they'll also hear breathtaking stories from National Geographic photographers and explorers, and take on gaming challenges and become a true champion for our seas every day. And in other news, this week, The Guardian reported undercover footage showing young dairy calves being kicked, violently thrown, having their heads stamped into the ground, and suffering from heat exposure at a U.S. farm known as the Disneyland of Agricultural Tourism. I had never even heard of this.
I'm glad that was in the headlines, too, because I think that will really capture it. Captured my last night at like 2 a.m. I'm like, I have to read this. This is relevant.
Yeah, so calves could be seen struggling to breathe and are observed suffering by themselves within their hut, according to a report by Animal Recovery Mission, ARM, the campaigners behind the footage. And with temperatures reaching as high as 110 degrees Fahrenheit, 43
degrees Celsius in the summer. Dehydration, malnutrition are also possible factors leading to their suffering and slowly dying at Fair Oaks Farms. Every year, more than 600,000 tourists visit the facility, a working dairy farm of 15,000 cows a few hours south of Chicago, Illinois, and the farm with its museum, restaurant, and hotel, deemed the Disneyland of agricultural tourism this year by Food and Wine magazine, sells a vision of a quaint rural life. It's where families can view pastures dotted with dairy cattle, they say, and watch as a piglet is born before they top off this idyllic country day with a scoop of ice cream or a pork chop from their restaurant.
That's very disturbing.
Yeah, so please check out a YouTube video. It's just 5 minutes. It's called Dairy is Scary, and I want people to know this is not an isolated incident. This is the dairy industry, period. Animals are suffering for dairy. There's no way around it.
And every single time there's an undercover investigation at any random farm, the results are always the same.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Do we have time for one more news story or no?
No, we don't.
Okay, just check out the Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. I have a call to action in regards to some bears that are going to a zoo. We just need you to sign a petition or make a phone call, please.
Thanks for that, Jen. You've been listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in British Columbia, Canada. Please join us for next week's show on Friday, June the 14th, which will be our Father's Day show. To start the show, we'll have a few interviews with vegan dads who are raising vegan children. Then for our feature interview, we'll be speaking with author and wolf enthusiast Tio Alfaro, who has a book coming out soon called The Wolf Connection, What Wolves Can Teach Us About Being Human. Tio will tell us about the stories in his book that have the intent of expanding our consciousness of wolves and changing the way the world sees and relates to wolves. So we here at Animal Voices, we modestly ask you to keep connected onto our show via the World Wide Web. You can download or listen to all of our podcasts at animalvoices.org, and we're also on iTunes and Google Play, and you can join our Facebook, Animal Voices Vancouver. So to close the show today, we'll be playing the song Fall on Me by Andrea Bocelli, and stay tuned now for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
I thought sooner or later the lights up above will come down in circles and guide me to love. But I don't know what's right for me, I cannot see straight. I've been here too long and I don't wanna wait for it. Fly like a cannonball straight to my soul. Tear me to pieces and make me feel whole. I'm willing to fight for it and carry this weight. But with every step I keep questioning what is true. Fall on me with open arms. Fall on me from where you are. Fall on me with all your light. With all ti illuminerà, seguila sempre, guidarti saprà, tu non arrenderti, attento a non perderti.